episode 713 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and I never realized pulling your leg could have such terminal consequences.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and... Wait, what happened to all the shows?
Well, yeah, it's that time of year, and certainly it's actually going to be to our advantage because the next month or so is a really good time for us to talk about, well, our recap for the year, for the past 12 months or so. So we might get into a little bit of that towards the end. But before we do that, we have to finish out the shows from this past week. And Edmund, that means we need a disclaimer.
Absolutely. As ever, as we discuss these shows, we will not feel any compunction to leave out anything we feel like mentioning. So if you haven't seen them, you will be spoiled.
You will indeed. And we are going to start off here with a show that just missed the top two, and that is Turn, Season 3, Episode 10, Trial and Execution. In the third season finale, there is an inevitable march to the gallows for the captured spies on both sides. Meanwhile, Benedict Arnold demands glory revenge. Glory revenge? Glorious revenge? Gory revenge? One of those?
one of those.
Yeah. Wow, that was an interesting typo. Yeah. Anyhow, this one coming in at an 8.5. And wow, yeah, that was quite the interesting and well-written double execution.
Yeah.
Air quotes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that was... extremely well done. One thing I found rather poignant about it is is also how well the parallel trials with Andre and Abe but also how they really sort of fully played out mirroring fates or mirroring perceptions of Andre and Arnold, where Andre, I was really really feeling sympathy for him by the end, his work coming throughout the show. J.J. Field, has done a wonderful job of building that character and his complexities and intelligence and his very nuanced morality, and taking a character who was never an out and out villain the way Simcoe has been throughout, but somebody who definitely starts off as the adversary and the manipulator and conniver, turned him into a very human character. And then with Arnold, just the way they had built up all of his lust for power and recognition, and then all the self-centeredness about his compensation, etc. So that by the end, even though he is the one who does survive, he does so in an extremely diminished capacity, and Andre is the one who he is executed, but you almost feel like he goes out on top. I mean, especially since in the end, it's clear who Peggy does actually love.
Yeah, it is. given the way that everything plays out, it's pretty clear. I think that the only real weakness here is in why it took off. I don't know that it took off the half point for me entirely, but it did take off a little bit. Was the fact that Abe's, I guess, the save,
yes,
at the end was a little overplayed,
mm-hmm.
But I'm okay with it. I mean, it's certainly no more egregious than, you know, Littlefinger and Sansa showing up at the very last minute.
I will give them credit because I think they were doing their research in terms of, you know, I think they'd introduced it earlier in the season, you know, or, mm-hmm. you know, but this whole thing of, you know, hanging is not the, the near instantaneous thing that it's often been depicted as in, movies and TV of the past, you know, no, and it was a pretty, pretty excruciating, way to die. Actually, now that I think about it, Black Sails also did a very good job with that earlier in the year.
Yes, indeed. Yes.
It may have carried on a bit too long, certainly. certainly the symmetry of Andre being taken to his final end, and and Abe's father, rescuing him at the end, not just from death, but then I did like the little twist that that he did actually wind up being the one who had twisted the dagger into Simcoe with the list that he had provided that turned out to not being the properties that Simcoe quite realized they were.
Mm-hmm.
Especially for the character who's been sort of the one seen as under the thumb of the English forces and leadership to finally have his revenge and in a manner completely befitting a magistrate and a man of the law.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a really good, strong season finale. I'm hoping, not unlike the 12 Monkeys discussion earlier, this does not turn out to be the end.
Yep. Although this was definitely a case of where I think, given their late reprieve last season, the fact they weren't telling the specific Benedict Arnold story, they were certainly shaping this to be something where, we've wrapped all this up. I would like to see it continue, but at least they have brought it to an obvious resting point.
Yeah, it could be the end if it had to be, but I'm still hoping.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's just so much fun.
Yeah.
All right, next on the list, another season finale that we're not quite sure whether or not it's the series finale, but here we are, Winona Earp, Season 1, Episode 13, I Walk the Line. In the Season 1 finale, the costs are high when Winona finds herself in a showdown with a most terrifying nemesis. Meanwhile, something shocking about Waverly's past comes to light, and an impossible choice is faced by Dolls. And I actually gave this one an 8. As endings go, this was a pretty solid one to the season. It did leave things open on a cliffhanger. I'll just leave it at that. I'm still not sure myself whether or not I would come back for a second season, but I will say once again, the second half of this season was much stronger than the first. That said, do I recommend it? Still not sure. It was entertaining enough, but if it had been on at any other time of year, definitely would have wound up even further down the line from it. So the fact that this the second half of this season was better because other things were getting off of the list, and this was just starting to be one of the few things that was actually on to watch. So that said, it did strengthen, I think, towards the end as the story began to actually move, and there was one character turn, one turn of events that happened in the last few episodes that actually I felt made the show much better as a result. But that also was resolved by the end of this episode. So,
yeah, not that I need details, but just since I did at least start the series, which character was it who made a turn?
Well, essentially, you had at the beginning two Earp sisters.
Right.
There turned out to be a third.
Oh, okay.
An older sister.
Ah.
So a contender for being the Earp heir. And there were several things that happened with that character that made things a lot more interesting.
Okay.
So that dynamic. Yes, that alone made things interesting enough for me to be curious as to how it would play out. But yeah, until that happened, I was really starting to waver, as we well know. So, all right, moving on then to the next piece here is Outcast, Season 1, Episode 4, A Wrath Unseen. The intrigue intensifies in town as Anderson uncovers startling news about someone close to him, and Megan holds fast to her secret. I gave this one also an 8. This one was a little bit more about the character's personal demons than the actual kind, but it wound up still being extremely tense. This is one of those little gems that I keep bringing up that there's only 4 episodes. If you can get your hands on it, this is a show worth watching if you like things that are unnerving and a little scary, more than a little scary. I love the atmosphere of this show. It's very confining. They definitely use sound extremely well, and I noticed this because I actually watched this with headphones, to enhance the effect. The storytelling is pretty strong. This is, again, this is based on material from Robert Kirkman, and he is involved in this show pretty heavily, the same guy who made The Walking Dead. So he's used to taking a supernatural concept and making the story about people extremely well. And I think that that's what this episode is about. It's more about the characters, but there is, by the end, a big implication that opens the story up in some interesting ways. But yeah, actually, they are taking the week off because of the holiday weekend, so now is a perfect time. 4 episodes, not that bad. Really, it'll pull you in, I'm fairly sure, especially if you like that kind of material. All right, next on the list is Powers, Season 2, Episode 5, Shaking the Tree. In the aftermath of a catastrophic political scandal, Walker and Pilgrim investigate a high-priority suspect and uncover shocking government connections. Meanwhile, Trip Hammer is determined to create a new Powers team, recruiting Zora and a new protege, Sergeant Martinez. And this one came in at an average of 7.75. And, for the most part, Creeper Will Wheaton.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those body scans of Retro Girl 2 are going to really come in handy for him, aren't they?
Yeah, I especially given the fact that, this being on PlayStation and having no worries from the FCC or certainly any regular standards and practices department. Yeah, I was when that hologram came up at the end, I was almost cringing, wondering what we were going to see. But they're just keeping it chaste for now anyway.
Yeah. For now, considering what we saw in the previous episode,
mm-hmm.
in the strip club, but anyway,
yes. this season definitely is feeling sort of much more cohesive in terms of the story. I'm enjoying the sort of new political conflicts, both the internal ones, I added half a point just because it was really nice to see to see Enrico Colantoni get a little taste of Elias again, even if he was wearing a strange toupee and being found in strange situations.
Yeah, Elias would never be in that situation.
Yeah, and yes, that is my obligatory person of interest reference for this show.
Of course. It's become almost a necessary thing. People should be putting money on how far into a given episode it's going to show up at this point, honestly. All right, yeah, I would agree this was a good, strong episode for those reasons. Next, The Last Ship, Season 3, Episode 3. I'm forgetting how they've pronounced it in this. Shang-Zai?
I think so, yeah.
Yep, okay. Chandler scrambles to find answers in an Asian Dodge city. Meanwhile, Slatterly seeks the truth about his predicament. I could remember how to spell it. I couldn't remember how they pronounced it. It's Chinese. Yeah, so. This one coming in at an average of 7.67. I don't know. Gary, you gave it a pretty high score, actually.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I like the fast-paced, almost nonstop action that seems to be happening so far in the beginning of this season. I was worried that we were going to be tied into St. Louis and it was going to be become mired down in politics as opposed to the action format that we're used to in this show. But they managed to actually pry it away from that and pull it back. And now we, as opposed to having internal conflict within the United States itself, they've pushed it abroad, and I believe it looks like it's going to sit that way for the sort of whole season. It's going to be having to do with Southeast Asia, at least that's what how it appears from the opening, unless mm-hmm. they're going to reshoot it. And so they now have an external threat this time around, and they're trying to keep it from being mounting into some sort of larger global conflict, which can still happen even in this day and age in this universe. And it's quite interesting. So I have to say, I give kudos to them for yet again sort of reinventing the show a little bit and moving forward with consequences, not having reset buttons, and just taking things further. It still shocked me at the opening of the season that they decided to write out Dr. Scott, and they've brought in several very strong women to fill I don't want to say the female role, because I don't think it really matters for their characters that they're female per se so much as they're talented individuals. So I'll just say that they're continuing to keep a good diversity in the cast.
Hmm. Okay. How about you, Edmund? Yeah, a somewhat different opinion of this one.
Well, it was just for me. I mean, I found it enjoyable enough, but I felt it felt like a little bit of a filler episode to me. I mean, where they were just sort of pushing things along incrementally, with the whole them going through the Dodge City aspect of it, just a case of. Especially this early in the season, I mean, not that they don't have characters die. I mean, as the good doctor as Gary just mentioned, but it seemed like, you know, yes, they're going into a dangerous situation, but I didn't really feel that anybody, you know, that there were necessarily going to be any major consequences out of it. While with our captives, I did enjoy the tactics there of them realizing that, you know, especially now they've uncovered this whole strange vampire angle, which especially with it being the scientist from Helix holding them, I'm finding rather amusing. So that was intriguing. I mean, the breakout and using that as much for recon. But just overall, it just still felt like we've got the situation set up. We're going to push it forward a little bit, and I'm waiting for bigger stuff to happen.
Hmm. Okay. Next on the list is Clever Man, Season 1, Episode 4, Sun and Moon. As the deaths continue and tensions mount, it's the Harrys who take the blame. So Waru commands Cohen to use his Cleverman powers to put a stop to the killings. And this one came in at an average of 7.5. And yeah, how do I put this? I mean, a lot's happening on this show. But what I'm really feeling like right now, and the reason that I gave it a 7.5, is that I feel like there's these big, huge chunks of exposition that just haven't been given to the audience. Like things that are just intentionally not being revealed or explained. And are they trying to maintain or generate mystery? I'm not clear on that.
Yeah, well, I mean, phrase that pops into my head is they're being too clever by half, where they think, oh yes, this is how you do it. you just give these little details, let the audience speculate about it, that's one reason why Clever Man is down here and 12 Monkeys is up at the top, because they will give you little details and then give you the background as well, especially for a show that's six episodes, and this is the fourth episode, and even now they're still introducing these little details about Ian Glenn's character, and now this sort of this shady research that he's engaging in, and I'm sort of just waiting for that to tie into the whole IVF plot line, in terms of what the hairy juice might induce in the reproductive realm, which I just realized does seem to be the strange underlying theme of this week on a few of our shows. And the other thing that I'm just finding incredibly annoying is this whole thing with Waru and the younger brother, and this sort of and this trope of the chosen one being this reluctant young man who doesn't want to embrace his heritage, finally getting a little blue glowy indication of what his powers might be, I think we needed a much better presentation not necessarily explanation, especially given the issues that they're commenting on with Aboriginal culture in Australia and in worldwide, I think it would have been nice to have somebody who is more willing to embrace it.
Well, what I found kind of interesting, I guess, here is that if they were, I guess the thing is that there's this intricate backstory to the quote unquote Harrys.
Mm-hmm.
That is nowhere to be found in these first four episodes.
Right, right.
Nowhere. They have no explanation for who they are at all.
Yeah.
They're just known to be this other population that have some kind of spiritual component to them and have, stronger abilities than most humans do and all this kind of stuff. And it's like, okay, but still, if you read a description of the show, there's a whole backstory to them that has never shown up in the actual episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's what I don't. It's like there's a whole lot you guys are intentionally holding back. Maybe it would be good to explain some of that somehow.
Yes. Yes.
That's the thing that gets me. It's like what you're telling me is this big backstory that you came up with is in fact completely irrelevant to the story that you're telling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So at any rate. Finally, that brings us to the final episode that we're talking about this week, and that is The Musketeers, Season 3, Episode 5, To Play the King. The Musketeers attempt to restore order in Paris after Grimald and Ferrand's breakout, which frees a homicidal lunatic. I do not speak French.
Châtelet. But anyway, Châtelet.
Okay. Yes. I got pretty close.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this one came in at an average of 7.5 as well. And I guess it's still moving forward with the villains pretty nicely, but I'm feeling like the middle of the season is a bit weaker than the start.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, this is a case of, you know, when I mean, it's not the clever man problem of not explaining things, but things, you know, just feel like they're moving extremely slowly. You know, so, you know, yes, we're you know, we are well aware of our villains. We're well aware of they've obviously been focusing much more on the social inequalities in Paris. You know, and these depressed enclaves of the poor. You know, but we've already seen that in the previous couple of episodes. And I actually just wind up being kind of disappointed that the underlying plot in this, you know, was essentially a jewel heist, you know, so guys, you had a chance to do a musketeer style jewel heist and it just wound up falling completely flat, you know, where I think that part of it, had potential, but they do some sort of, Louis Kahn's take on Ocean's 11 or Hustle or, one of those types of shows.
Hmm. But yeah, this the middle of the season isn't quite doing it for me, and I'm hoping that they kind of get their story a little back on track as they kind of wrap up this whole series in the next few episodes.
Yep.
All right, that is it for the episodic discussion. What we're going to then get into a little bit are some of the open topics, but one of those topics is the start of our discussion of the past year's worth of content. And we're not going to talk about the shows that we actually finished the seasons out for or which ones were canceled or so forth, but rather the shows that we just couldn't bring ourselves to finish. Yeah, there are five on the list.
Okay.
And a couple of these are the ones that I don't even know how many of us actually watched. But I'll just throw these out. They all, of course, were towards the bottom of our list of... right now, if I take these out, there are remaining 61 shows. So these were in excess of the 61 shows that we that are still on the list, believe it or not. Let's see here. So we are going to start off with the first show on the list, which is Gotham. And I think we all wound up kind of giving this one up pretty early.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hung on a little longer.
But... Yeah, a little longer? Yeah. And what did you think of what you saw?
Well, gee, I never had a clear sense that they knew what they wanted to do with the show. It seemed really patchy, and honestly, Gordon overshadowed everyone in the series. And perhaps intentionally, he really struck me as the main character, although they did at some point, at varying points, try to play it off as a two-point-of-view show where Bruce would get a certain amount of time and Gordon would get a certain amount of time. And that never really worked out that well because the Bruce storyline was never, ever really compelling in any way. Gordon's growth, unfortunately, geez, it never felt like it happened, even though for all he went through, it really should have. Mm-hmm. But the character never seemed to mature, grow, or make substantially different decisions than he did from the first episode. And that was really disheartening. I would have liked to obviously, he did start to see a little bit more of gray in the situations. But at the same time, it still didn't stop him from doing pretty much exactly what he had done before. So... if they had perhaps had him grow up a little bit more, and I'm not even sure how to use the Bruce character because it just never really worked as a with what they were doing with Gordon and the majority of the villains who didn't interact with Bruce virtually at all, except when he was being held hostage.
Right.
So that didn't. So it felt like they had everything there. They just couldn't quite get it lined up and then going. It would just seem like the show, even after a season, we still really haven't gotten anywhere except a lot of dead bodies, and that's sad because I think the Gordon character definitely has potential to grow, and some of the one or two of the auxiliary characters even seem like they had some growth. And you know, when the most popular characters on your show are the villains, and it's in some respects a superhero show, or at least a good guy show,
yeah,
that's not the best way to run a show. And they even went and did a whole villain focus, because I think they knew the other thing wasn't working at all. So when even the show writers sort of start to give up on their premise, then why should the audience stay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I know what I found strange. I mean, it was the few episodes I watched at the beginning that whole advertising campaign when they started going into, you know, that it was now Gotham Rise of the Villains, and you know, bringing James Frayne in and sort of, you know, setting up you know even more villains. When it seemed to me that they really should have capitalized on Penguin being such a breakout character, you know, in terms of the character, and the amazing portrayal that Robin Lord Taylor was giving it, and we of course talked about from the beginning, I mean, how it didn't really make sense to, you know, be including so much of Bruce, you know, when he's not Batman yet, he's just this little kid, you know, he's on the start of his journey, and if they pulled it back into this whole idea of Gordon and Penguin sort of, you know, being the ones butting heads with each other, and almost playing on the fact that Gordon needs to try and bring the police into line, Penguin can help bring still a villain, but could help sort of consolidate the organized crime side of Gotham, you know. But then it's almost, you know, it's setting up this path, you know, for down the line, you know, when Gordon needs to finally take him out, you know, 10 years from now or whatever, you know, 8 years from now, not the series would run that long, you know. Yes, that's when you then need this other vigilante bat type character to come in and help him finally do that. So but here's the classic case of, you know, yeah, let's start rewriting the series, and if you have to start thinking along those lines, then there's something they're not quite getting right.
Probably. But yeah, I mean, we gave it another shot for the second season, and I think, as you guys were saying, the focus on the villains versus the heroes was probably a problem.
Yeah.
And it seems like they're just doubling down on that. So
yeah, I mean, honestly, to me, it started feeling like sort of the, you know, the DC, you know, TV universe. I mean, this isn't, you know, the DCW, since it is over on Fox, but the one outlier. But it felt like to me sort of the, you know, this DC version of Once Upon a Time. You know, so, you know, with a promising start, and then just sort of devolves into cliche and okay, how many franchise characters can we squeeze in here?
It's probably not a bad comparison, unfortunately. All right, next on the list here is Lucifer, which unfortunately I only gave a few episodes to, and I was pretty much the one who was watching it. Pretty much ended on an average note. In this case, it was a show that, at least in my opinion, it kind of worked in terms of the main character. The main character was a lot of fun to watch, but I felt like the actual show was very derivative in terms of the procedural side of it. And I never could quite wrap my head around the fact that you had a show that was this Lucifer character as a detective.
Yes, exactly.
It just didn't follow.
Of course, yes.
It didn't come together. And from what I understand is that from some people is that it got a little bit better at that as time went on, but I just couldn't quite get it, and it wasn't really, I think the problem is that the procedural elements actually were pretty weak at the beginning, so I was really just watching it for one character, and at the time it was the fall and there were so many other things that were on that were better. So this one having a very average start, I didn't really have a lot of impetus to keep going. So next on the list, I'm not sure who else was watching this as well, this was back in the fall, was Blindspot.
I hung in for a little while.
Okay, and what is it that kind of led you to leave it go or to move on?
It was I think it was I lasted three or four episodes. It was
I think that the whole it was feeling too contrived for me. I mean, this whole mystery of the amnesiac, found naked with all these tattoos, all over her body, and they were starting to introduce, some of that backstory of, so she apparently, seemed to have done this deliberately, but then had her memories erased, and, sort of the mystery figure, who had arranged all this. I think it was sort of a double whammy thing of NBC was trying to play off of the success of The Blacklist, which I enjoyed quite a bit in its first season, but then at the same time as this was premiering, it was starting its second season and it already started to get outrageous in its plot twisting, and was just getting worse and worse, and I was just getting the same vibe from this, so I just kind of dropped both of them at about the same time.
I went back and looked, and this one was one that Bronstam was actually trying to keep up with a little bit. Yes. And just eventually dropped as well, and it ended with an average of 6.7, so it was definitely trending below average. And as we kind of even stated earlier in the season, if it starts to go below average for too long, it's just not going to stay on our list because there's so many other shows that we can watch.
Yeah.
So we didn't always hold to that, but we were pretty close. If I look at those 61 shows, 3 are below average.
Yes.
And two of those are canceled. So.
Hey.
Yes. It's.
Yeah.
It was mostly those two shows that I'm talking about that were canceled. We pretty much only hung in with them because we wanted to go to the end.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's one of those situations.
Yeah. But of course, some other shows right at the top were canceled too, but anyway.
Yeah, we'll get to that eventually. But at any rate, the next one on the list here is, I think, one that only I was trying to watch, and that is the Shannara Chronicles. If I go back and look at that, I'm just going to very quickly confirm. Yep, I pretty much was the only one that was trying to give this one a shot. I gave it exactly 3 episodes. 3 episodes earlier this year. And it was trending definitely below average. And from what I understand, I got out before it got even worse. But this was an example of a much ballyhooed adaptation. A lot of people thinking, hey, this might be good. And then it came out and it was kind of rewritten to focus on teenage characters, as you would expect from MTV, I guess.
Yes.
And even with Manu Bennett on the show, it just was not hitting. And in some cases, the characters were almost unrecognizable from what I understand. So, yeah, that was a failure. I don't know if the show is still around. I want to say that it got a second season, but
I believe it did. I think I remember that popping up on the news at one point.
Yes, quite possibly. So it's for those who actually enjoyed the show, that's good. I'm glad, but it just did not hit it for me. And it certainly seemed to disappoint people who were familiar with the property or more familiar than I am. So unfortunate. The final show here of the ones that we kind of dismissed before the end of their season is Hunters. And this was one that I watched definitely. Mm-hmm. I gave it my all. I didn't watch the full season, obviously, but I watched half of it, 7 episodes, and even though the show itself was not poorly done, I mean, it came in at an average of almost 7.5, quite frankly, I just stopped caring about it. The episodes were technically good, but it never really amounted to the promise of what the premise was. And it really was giving me the impression of that style before substance type of situation. So, yeah, unfortunately, it was a production by some of the executive producers behind The Walking Dead. And it just, I don't know, it was a very, the production style was very flat, which didn't help. And the characters, just I could not engage with them very well at all. I gave it to 7 episodes because I wanted to see if the character-centric episodes would turn me around. And actually, I cared even less about the characters after those episodes. So,
ouch.
Yeah, I mean, the central character just is a complete blank to me. So yeah, it's a flawed show. I know there's some people who still enjoyed it. I believe it's still running out its season, as it was kind of parallel with 12 Monkeys. But this is not a 12 Monkeys show. This is a show that looks a lot better than the actual execution is. And aesthetically, when you look at it, you think of it and you go, well, this has to be pretty good because it actually looks like almost like an Expanse type show in terms of the visuals. But it's not. The storytelling is just not there. So that one I had to let go. It is the highest scored show out of the ones that just could not get the full season out of. So that one probably the one that hurts the most because it just looked like it was going to be so much better than it was. But there we are. And it's also one of those, of the recent years, it's probably the biggest misfire from my point of view from sci-fi in a little while. I don't count that, you know, whatever show Olympus that they had. That was clearly just an import that they bought and tried to spool out, and it was trash. But this was something that definitely showed a lot of promise. They had a lot of good people behind the scenes, and it just didn't come together. So, a swing and a miss. But hopefully we will see a little bit more promise out of things like Incorporated that are coming up. And certainly The Expanse was a big win.
Absolutely, so. Yeah, and
yeah, we'll be talking about that eventually.
Yeah, and of course, I am quite interested to see what happens in these sophomore seasons of Killjoys and Dark Matter,
which we'll be talking about next week.
Absolutely. But actually, I mean, just to circle back to, I mean, when you were talking about Winona Earp, I mean, when I was hanging in for those first few episodes, you know, one of my big things was, you know, no, this just reeked so much of a Lost Girl wannabe. But it was also then reminding me that, you know, oh yes, wait a minute, I have that show from Lost Girls creator, which was not trying to be a Lost Girls wannabe, but had certainly, you know, some of those, sort of witty, sexy, you know, kick-ass stuff that we love the early seasons of Lost Girl for, you know, but just in, space opera bounty hunter guys.
Exactly. So, I just said that Hunters was kind of the misfire when I'm completely overlooking the fact that Winona Earp was on sci-fi.
Well, yes.
But the fact of the matter is that show, despite ostensibly being lower quality than Hunters could or should have been, wound up to me at least being worth watching the full season for.
Right. Yeah.
Hunters, I just couldn't bring myself to do it. It was actually a chore. By the time I got to episode 7, I just felt like I was doing it because I was trying to hang in there. So there are other shows that I feel like have more promise. I mean, even if we look at the stuff that's on our list right now, I mean, Clever Man is not doing great, but there's something there. So, yeah. All right. That is it for this week. Unless there's anything you guys want to bring up?
Just real quick, I did want to mention about back in Game of Thrones that we discussed earlier in the week. One scene we didn't mention was the Maester's Library and how awesome looking that was. As well as it looks like we see their chandeliers are the model for the opening scenes.
The astrolabes.
Yes. So yes. That was fun to see.
Yes, that's interesting, which, you know, also suggests just a little bit that, you know, some people are wondering, well, what is Sam's role in this whole story at this point? And the one answer that comes to mind is, could he be the one who's telling the story
telling
of what's
story.
Happening
of
during
course.
These years?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
As, you know, the Maester. So, yeah, that would make a lot of sense to me. So,
yeah, wasn't something I thought about, but the moment you brought it up, I mean, that was what immediately popped into my head. He's telling the story.
Right. So that would be, a fairly intriguing way for them to go. And it would also make sense since the Maesters are supposed to be the ones that essentially do exactly that.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. So. He spent all that time at, while he was with the Watch going through the libraries.
Yes, exactly. All right. And Edmund, any last points of business on your end?
No, I don't think so.
All right, in which case, we're going to go ahead and wrap this week up. And next time, as we said, we've got a few summer shows debuting. So until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus, under the Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.